Hi! Welcome to another episode of I'll Go If You Go. I'm your host, Emily Harwitz. For today's episode, we are heading up north to the land of the Redwoods and Redwoods people to talk with Francisco Saavedra, a 2023 and 2024 Redwoods Rising apprentice. Redwoods Rising is a landscape-scale restoration project in Redwood National and State Parks, now home to almost half of all the world's remaining old-growth redwoods and part of Yurok and Tolowa ancestral territories. The goal of Redwoods Rising is to restore forests and watersheds across the 120,000 acres of land in areas damaged by historical logging. We'd planned to record this conversation outside in the Arcata Community Forest, but it was raining the whole time we were up there. I love the rain, but my microphones don't. So we recorded inside Save the Redwoods League's McKinleyville office. But through his stories, Francisco takes us outside, deep into the redwood forest among his redwood ancestors, to share how he got into forestry, his experience as a Redwoods Rising apprentice, and his perspective on what it means to be a guardian of the redwoods. We'll let Francisco take it from here.
Hello, my name is Francisco Saavedra. Ayukui Kushan Awa Pass, to all my local indigenous people listening. I am Pitt River of the Medesi Band with Yurok and El Salvadorian ancestry, and it's an honor to speak with you all today.
What did you do as a Redwoods Rising apprentice? What did that look like?
With Redwoods Rising, I had the opportunity to be a forestry apprentice. My job was predominantly timber cruising. For those of you listening who don't know what a timber cruiser does, timber cruising is the process of measuring stands to determine characteristics such as tree sizes and volumes and basal area. And when you're looking at such a huge restorative site, it's thousands of acres, you know, it's not just one prescription, you know, that's like, okay, here's the prescription and let's treat it all the same, you know, and that's where our forestry technicians are so vital. You need someone to go out there and give you accurate inventory of what species out there, what it looks like.
So cruising, does that mean you're driving around like in a 4x4?
No. You know, that's interesting. Forestry in California, in the Wild West, is a lot different than what you'd see forestry on the East Coast and the other states. Our diameter classes are much larger. So we're going out there measuring very large basal areas. We're not going out there on an ATV. We're not going out there via truck. The terrain is so steep. And so many of these roads have been either commissioned, decommissioned. It's a maze out there that we walk to these plots. Like you feel cool. You feel really cool. You got like 30 to maybe 40 pounds of equipment, and you feel like a tree recon specialist.
It sounds cool.
Yeah, you feel like a soldier for good. You know, you're a soldier for restoration. You feel cool.
What did your role consist of, and what was your favorite thing about it?
My favorite thing about being a Redwoods Rising apprentice was that, you know, in some apprentices, you're kind of locked into your discipline. In the Redwoods Rising apprenticeship, we got to really jump around and work with the other disciplines where we could see where restoration, whether it's aquatic restorations, road restoration, and forest restoration, all come hand in hand. And something like that is so beautiful because for an upcoming student trying to find his educational niche within the realm of forestry and natural resources, it's beautiful to see how the different facets of this field or this art all come together for one common goal. On top of that, it was phenomenal experience to work amongst the NPS staff, the state park staff. We also, something that was really powerful that really, made me respect the whole program is that they sent us up north, Crescent City, north of Yurok territory, to the Tolowa Dene Nation, where we got to participate in some land reclamation and some sign installation. And as an indigenous person who, you know, I do fight for land back, I do fight for cultural recognition, I do fight for indigenous stewardship, it was good to, you know, put the actual ancestral names to these places so that everyone, every American, every person who visits can see that, oh, you know, this land has a name. And I think that that was immensely powerful, and I was just so glad to be a part of that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You know, so I think apprenticeships are important. I encourage any community college student and any, you know, university student who is in the field of natural resources to get involved in technician work, get involved in apprenticeships, because they give you kind of that real life perspective of like, hey, you know, it's one thing to take a forestry measurements applications class and know the theory behind the mathematics, know the trigonometry behind tree heights, know, you know, but it's one thing to go and practice it in the field and get it down pat. And I think that those kind of experiences are so valuable.
How did you hear about the Redwoods Rising Project?
It's a great story. The way I heard about the Redwoods Rising Project is, you know, I'm blessed to go to College of the Redwoods here out of Eureka, where I'm surrounded by professors who are really proactive in creating job and career opportunities for their students. I had a phenomenal professor that was, I'd say, life-changing. She was my first face that I saw in Intro to Forestry. And she's taught the class so well and in such an enthusiastic way that I felt immediately interested. She manages a forestry club, and she's always shooting all these different opportunities at her students. And she invited us to go to this thing called the Society of American Foresters. And oh boy, the title sounded intimidating to me. I was nervous. I didn't know what to expect. I was like a first year forestry student, and I was quite nervous. Actually, so much nervous that before I even went to Society of American Foresters, I had to call my mom. Because I said, hey, I don't know what to expect. I'm scared. I feel like I don't fit in. But as soon as I heard the presentation from Redwoods Rising, from your guys' former fellow Carla, I realized that this project right here hits every single restoration goal that I want to do in my life in an area that I want to live and that I want to be in. And like from then on, it was like tunnel vision, like apply, and cross my fingers. And when I got selected to be a forestry apprentice, I felt like Charlie Brown got the golden ticket. I felt like it's on. Like Creator gave me an opportunity of a lifetime, and now it's time to buckle down. So I became even more dedicated with my studies. I tried even harder in Dr. Tim Baker's forestry measurements class. I became obsessive, and now I'm a forestry animal, and I love it. I eat, breathe, live forestry and natural resources. And I want to dedicate my life to the restoration of California's ecosystems.
That's so cool that you have found this path and this opportunity, you pursued it, and now you've done it. And it just so deeply resonates with who you are.
Yeah, I always tell people forestry found me. I was a 25-year-old kid who didn't know what he wanted to do with his life. I jumped around a lot of majors, and I finally went back to school at 25. I'm a late bloomer, but I found my niche. And I think that, you know, when you find something that you're good at, stick with it.
How did this experience influence your career direction?
It solidified that this is 100% what I want to become. I want to become one of the best professional tribal foresters in the state of California, and maybe even the nation. I know it sounds delusional, but sometimes you have to be. You have to be obsessive, and that's me. I'm the guy.
I've been saying I need to be more delusional about my dreams and aspirations. You have to believe it, otherwise you can't achieve it.
Yeah, you know, if you have the courage to see it in your head, and you have the courage to speak it out loud, just show up. I think that that's my biggest advice to anyone that wanted to get involved in ecological restoration, is that, you know, like going to the gym, what's the hardest part? Showing up. Like doing anything, it's the consistency. And if you want to get involved in restoration work, find other people who are doing what you're doing and say, hey, network, have the courage. Say, hey, how do I become a part of that? Where can I volunteer for that? And be Johnny on the spot. Say yes. And if you can overcome that, you'd be surprised how many doors really open up for you. You know, a lot of people say, oh, it's not that easy. It is that easy. It's not, like, you know, you still got to do the work. But that's what I would say for people who wanted to get involved in restoration. Find local projects. You don't have to be the smartest, the brightest, the most brilliant. You don't even have to be the most physically able. California's ecosystem needs all of you. That we need scientists, we need biometricians, we need statisticians. If you're not down to walk 8 to 9 miles in timber cruise, there's still a place for you. So that would be my message to everyone listening who says, man, I want to get involved in restoration. How do I make a difference in my community? Just start volunteering. Just start saying, hey, you know, how can I get involved?
Just like an ecosystem in nature, there are so many niches that you can find. And like you said, there's a place for everyone in this
world. Yeah, there's a place for everyone. And you know what? I go to college with beautiful students from all walk of life, and the common consensus is changing. You know, most students that I meet want a holistic view, want an ecocentric view. They don't want the world to end. They don't want client, you know, that's what we want. We want a healthy ecosystem, because a healthy forest, a healthy soil equals healthy people. And one of my favorite things about the Redwoods Rising Project is, you know, I sit here before you as a 28-year-old man, and I can't historically undo the damage that's been done. I can't historically undo the uncomfortable history, but the work we do here really does right a lot of historical wrongs, no matter what background you come from. And I think that that is extremely healing for our people.
It's like, I'm imagining this as, you know, you're weaving and you dropped a bunch of stitches here, or something happened where, like, now there's a hole in your fabric. Well, the work you're doing is kind of, you're able to go back and knit that back up and then keep moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I also am realistic. You know, sometimes I know that I might not see the fullness of the restoration of my lifetime. But if I can give every breath to restoration, that would mean a breath of fresh air for the future. There's a saying in our culture that when you're a child and you're a little fry and you're a little salmonoid, you spend your whole life going with the flow. You go with the stream. But then you spend your adult life fighting back upstream. You give your entire life fighting that journey back upstream to give it all your nutrients, all your eggs, all your life force for the next generation. And that's what I am. I'm an indigenous ecological warrior.
When you think about your future in conservation, what do you envision?
I see myself doing conservation until I'm an old man. I want to be like a guy that people look at. It's like 70-something years old, 60-something years old, and they're like, man, that guy is in shape, he's phenomenal, and he's still doing it. And I want to be an educational and a cultural resources for people who have questions. I want to be someone who inspires youth in my community, and I want to be able to transition myself into being an educator and a teacher, you know, a teacher of traditional ecological knowledge, a teacher of forestry. That's where I see myself in the future of conservation. But when I think of the future of conservation as a whole, I imagine a more ecocentric generation than the previous one. I see a future of more indigenous-led stewardship of Native people being included into these conversations. I see traditional ecological knowledge with forestry and natural resources studies as a whole being incorporated more into our education system, K-12. I want to put traditional ecological knowledge in the hands of everyone, respectfully, you know, to kind of instill that same spiritual obligation to the land that Indigenous people have. It's something that I want to inspire in the hearts of millions of Americans.
Hey, listeners. Do you have comments, questions, stories about working in the Redwoods? We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email at outreach@savetheredwoods.org. Okay, back to the episode. What do you think the Redwoods remember about your first visit?
I've always known that the Redwoods were a living being. I consider them a direct relative, they're an ancestor. I don't think the Redwoods necessarily remember me personally, but I think that they can see through me and see my heart, my ancestors, and everyone that came before me. When I go back into the Redwood Forest, I don't feel like I'm in the quote-unquote wilderness. I feel like I'm in my grandmother's backyard. I feel like I'm home. I feel like I could get off work, fall asleep in the Redwoods, and I'd be completely fine. What the Redwoods remember about me and my work is that, you know, and the conversations that I've had with Keel, and, you know, your awkward for Redwood, is that I'm here to help you. I've rested my forehead in my sweat against these Redwood trees. And like they, you know, like let my soul, let my spirit speak into you and just understand that I'm here, you know, not to trespass. I'm here not to disrespect. You know, I know that I have to stick this little metal thing in you and take the diameter, and it may feel very disrespectful. It might feel invasive, you know? Would you just go up to your grandmother and stick a pin in here and measure her and do all these measurements? But I need to do it because I'm like a medicine man out there. I'm trying to heal these redwoods. So I think the redwoods love me and I love them. And I think that, you know, one day when I pass on into the spirit world, I'll return and I'll be a redwood too. You know, and hopefully I grow really big and large and probably reside somewhere in Indian country, and I get to watch prescribed burns happen, and I get some bad burn scars, man. Engine tattoo burn scars from all the engines that practice prescribed burns, and I watch basket makers and I watch dancers and I singers, and I seen the Renaissance and I seen the dream that I gave my whole life for.
That's so sick.
Yeah, that's what I'd want to be. I think the redwoods know who I am beyond like what we would conceptualize, like time and space. You know, in Western society, we look at time as very linear, but it doesn't really exist like that. It's more like an ocean. And sometimes I think that the redwood trees know so much more about me than I'd ever know about myself. And it's just an honor. I believe, and many other believe, that the forest knows who you are long before you've ever seen the redwood tree. There's so much life and so much, like, think of it as like neuroconnective activity that every step you make in the forest translates to a rhythm on the mycelial mat that makes up this whole system. So it's like when you start thinking things from that perspective, you know that, like, hey, they know I'm here. And when you walk like that, it's like, okay, well, it's a different perspective. That's why sometimes the field of forestry and natural resources is sometimes hard from an academic standpoint, because, you know, we do look at things as living beings, you know, and it's not like we're crying for every tree that gets cut down, but, you know, we want the forest to understand that I'm here to help. And, you know, and it's as crazy as the sound, you know, I've had many conversations while in the redwoods of, like, you know, this is what we're doing out here, this is why I'm here, you know, like, what, you know, and that's all I gotta say about that, really. You know,
yeah,
the redwoods are alive, the forest is alive, everything around you has a life force, has an energy.
So we've made it to the lightning round. And the first question I have for you is, you've had a long relationship with the redwoods. If you could work in another capacity in the redwoods, what would you do?
Well, right now I'm living my dream of pursuing my goal as a registered professional forester. But if I could do anything in the redwoods in another capacity, it'd probably be that of a culturally significant documentary filmmaker. But I'd like to make educational videos of the ethnobotanical uses and cultural perspectives, stories, and truths from indigenous people as they, you know, of California plants and wildlife. That would be something I'd want to do. I would want to, you know, take my songs and my necklace of medicine and make these connections with other indigenous people all throughout California and, you know, document and film respectfully their culture. And be that filmmaker, like a Viceland type guy.
Well, I hope to see them one day.
Thank you.
If you were a redwood, where would you be and why?
Somewhere protected, where I could develop under plenty of sunlight and become an ancient one, and watch stream restorations and our people prosper. Probably Greater Prairie Creek State Park, because that's where I initiated my first timber cruise. It's where I got a first taste of restoration work, and I would love to reside there as a redwood tree, you know, grow really big, tall. And then when I'm hundreds and hundreds of years old, I'll ask lightning or one of my buddies to knock me down so that I could become a redwood canoe and be immortalized as a being, you know, and transport people up and down the Klamath River and take them on their last boat rides, take them to the spirit world, take, you know, laughter, joy. That would be my existence as a redwood.
Back to the redwoods that know you.
Yeah.
All right. This is
I love this one, though. What would I bring with me?
Yeah, this is a fun, light one. Or maybe not. It can be whatever you want it to be. You're going to spend a day in the redwoods. What are three things you're taking with you?
Water. You always bring water. Water's life, water's good for hydration. Sometimes if you take something really cool from the redwoods and you got nothing else to offer, you got no tobacco, you got no cool rock, sometimes you can give some of your water. And that's an offering of respect. You know, the second thing I'd bring is a friend or a loved one. Experiences are better enjoyed with other people. You know, beauty's best shared with other people. So, you know, bring a loved one with you. And lastly, a good stick and a heart. You know, always go in the woods with a stick. You know, one walking stick can take pounds of pressure off each one of your knees. You know, you want to, it's about longevity in this game.
Yeah.
If you want to walk the redwoods forever, I recommend you get good footwear, a stick, water, and a friend.
Well, that's the spirit of All Go If You Go.
Yeah.
It's been a real pleasure and honor to share the space with you today and to talk about the Redwoods, your experiences as a Redwoods Rising apprentice and as a future major hardcore forester.
Thank you so much. Walk Loud, deepest thanks to you. Thank you for taking the time to come and speak with me today. You know, I look forward to making my community and my people and my nation proud. Very honored to have this podcast and share words with you today. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for joining us on I'll Go If You Go, a Save the Redwoods League podcast. This season is produced by Leslie Parra and hosted, edited, and sound engineered by Emily Harwitz. Thank you to Adam Kaplan for tech support and Caleb Castle, Marcos Casaneras, and Mary McFeely for graphic design and media support. Theme song and music are by Nunu Yen and Annie Fung. You can find seasons 1, 2, and 3 wherever you listen to podcasts or on SaveTheRedwoods.org, where you can also find transcripts of each episode. If you like our show, please rate and review. It helps more people find us and join in the conversation. For behind the scenes and bonus content, follow us on Instagram at IllGoIfYouGoPod. If you have comments or questions, you can email us at outreach@SaveTheRedwoods.org. We'd love to hear from you and maybe even share your comments on the podcast. And that's all, folks. Catch you next time.